get you guys wound up and worn out. That's pretty cool. Let me go ahead and take a moment to pray, and we'll get started. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I thank you for this morning and for every person that you've brought here. God, we have this opportunity to be together and to hear about you and hear specifically what you're talking to us about in our life. And God, I pray in this short time that you focus our attention on the fact that you are a God who desires to bless us. And Lord, we need to make a clear choice of choosing your way over ours. I pray, Lord, that you guide what I say, and I pray you guide even our times at the table, Lord. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. We've been doing a series called American Idols. That's right. How many of you like the show American Idol? Not that many. Okay. I know that it's been on for a little while, and so some people, I think, are like past it. I always enjoy when it starts up because you get to see all the people who really can't do that well, which is not really a great way to think of it, but we've looked through a number of different idols. Today I'm going to approach it a little bit differently in the sense of I really want us to focus on one man and kind of the lesson that God has for us through it. Let me tell you a little bit about my life. I grew up in Herndon. Matter of fact, I was born in Herndon when there was less than 2,000 people in Herndon. Most of the people that lived in Herndon at that time were farmers. My grandfather actually lived on the main street in Herndon, Eldon Street. My grandfather and my father are both doctors. My grandfather would go out and make house calls in rural Loudoun County. They would pay him with chickens and other things. So, real humble beginning. I remember growing up and being excited about going to first grade. Went to Herndon Elementary. Was kind of nervous, you know. Went there. Had a really tough year. Matter of fact, I failed first grade. It's hard to do, actually. They give you a lot of help, but I failed it. That wasn't a great start to my life. But through that, my mom figured out that there was something wrong with me. No kidding. But found out that I had a thing called dyslexia, okay, which means my mind would flip things around. I also had something going on, though, that was even on top of that. It was called a double dominance, which meant my brain had not figured out yet whether left or right-handed was what I was going to be. So, for instance, my dad put a basketball hoop up in my backyard, and I would go out and practice, and I would miss the whole backboard because I was having opposing, my head didn't know what to do with it. And it was a little frustrating, quite honestly. So, I wasn't achieving very well in academics, obviously, or athletics, and that started something in me, a drive to want to get normal, and God led my parents to put me in a private school, and in that private school, they really helped me build a dominance. Unfortunately, they destroyed a really lucrative career. My double dominance showed itself when I would write. It would make any sense until you put it in a mirror. Because that's the way my brain looked at things. So I could have been one of those people who writes things out and says, hey, check out the secret thing I just wrote and put it in there, and there you go. It's upside down and backwards. So, but they thought it'd be better for me to be normal like you and be able to write so everyone could read it. So I did. So anyway, I worked really hard. I went to this private school. They helped me focus and whatnot, and God was gracious. Not everyone who struggles with what I did, many have it more severe than I did. And I was able to finally build a dominance on my right hand, and that worked. And I started working hard. And I'm the kind of student, I don't know if this is like you or not, but I'm the kind of student that I always knew there were smarter people than me because they would be like getting it. And they would not study, and they'd like get it. And I'd study, and I'd study, and I'd study, and I'd, you know, work real hard. And I'd get okay grades, but I definitely didn't do well on tests. So I hated tests because it's like, oh, I got to know it right now. And I only have that long. Got to get it done. So, but I worked my way through until I got good enough to where in high school, I really started to achieve. I really started doing well athletically. I was a football player. I was a wrestler. If there had been lacrosse, I would have been a lacrosse player, but there wasn't. Academically, I really worked very hard on my studies and graduated with a 3.8, which was out of a 4.0 at the time. They don't have that anymore. Now it's 4 point something. You know, it goes way up. But I was able to put it out there and push myself and succeed. And I'll never forget, I went to William & Mary, which was then and still is a pretty hard school to get into. And my greatest thought was, God, don't let me fail there. Because I knew somehow I'd gotten past the screeners, and they didn't know that I wasn't that smart. And I knew there's a lot of brilliant people at William & Mary. And the fear of failure just basically overtook me. And I was going to do anything I could not to fail. Matter of fact, my life got really small. It got so small that this was my day. I would get up, I would have class, which in college is like 4 or 5 hours or whatever, have lunch, study for 8 hours, eat something, go to bed. That was my life. Because I feared failing. And so I put everything I could into succeeding. And the thing I want to share from you, from just starting off with my life, is that God's desire for success is totally different than what the world has. The world will give you a sense of success at different levels, but there's a fatal flaw with it. And that's what I want you to see today. If you make the decision today of where you're going to set your goals and how you're going to pursue them, you will be set on a great course. So I hope this really makes sense to you today. I hope that you can understand what I think God is trying to say here. Part of me helping you do that is I've given you a sheet of paper on there. It's got a lot of squares. It's really going to help you kind of follow along. We're going through a chapter in 2 Kings, chapter 5. We're talking about a man named Naaman. Okay? Go ahead and bring up my PowerPoint there. That'll help too. American Idol. All right. Keep going. Oh. It gave me the magic wand. I forgot. It works. Okay. So today we're looking at the idol of success and performance. I believe that you guys in this area, you're growing up in a place where your parents are, by and large, very successful people. That's why they live here. We live in probably the world's greatest accumulation of military, politics, business leaders that are all highly successful, and that's why they're here. In this area, I've seen when I was in high school, you could actually go out for a team and just enjoy it. Okay? Today, in athletics, that's not good enough anymore. I remember as a youth pastor about 15 years ago, one of my first students had their own personal trainer, meaning he hired a coach just to coach him. I'm like, wow, that's aggressive. My kids went to Oakton, and they were trying out for lacrosse, and they said, oh, by the way, if you're gonna play lacrosse here, you're going to have to do this other track of training offline on your own, and it'll cost about $200 a month. But that's just the way it is. Like, wow. Then my friends, I noticed in band, band used to be a place you could just play your instrument and enjoy it. Now it's like, we are going to go to London. We are going to make a big deal. We are going to train. We're going to win our district region. We're going to get the ranking that we need. And man, if you're in band or aspiring to be, it's not just playing instruments anymore. It's, we are going to go somewhere with this. Matter of fact, my son Abe this year, he's in a history class. It used to be a combined class, which is an AP class. And as you know, as you go into high school, there are classes that are set for those who really want basically college-level training. Well, he stepped back from that in his history class, and I went to parents' night last week. I was the only parent there. You know why? Because it wasn't an AP class. The majority of his class are those who really aren't that excited about schoolwork. And for many of them, they have parents that both work, and a lot of them work at night. So I just want to give you a flavor. You're living in a place where you are pushed to succeed. And if you jump on that track and ride it through your life, you will be successful. But God says you may miss something. And that's where I want to kind of have you step back just a little bit. All right, we're going to walk through. First, I'm going to give you a key verse. It's on the top of your page there. It's something that I really love about the Lord. It says, the blessing of the Lord, it makes rich, and he adds no sorrow to it. The blessing of the Lord, makes rich, he adds no sorrow to it. Meaning, when God makes you rich, there's not a downside. For many people, getting wealth means they become slaves to that wealth. They have to worry about it. They have to hire people to help them keep it and invest it. It owns them. When you get things, and those things start corroding, got a great truck. My son John loves my truck. But it's got a cancer called rust, and it's eating it alive. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, I got an estimate on it. Like, wow, surgery is expensive. You know, keep that thing, you know, bummer. But stuff does that. It's always going to do that. God says he'll give you things, and there's no downside. There's no hangover. There's no owning. There's only blessing. And that's the kind of wealth you want. Okay, we're going to walk through this chapter in Naaman. I want you to pay attention. I'm going to talk to you. Squares on the left side are really there for you to kind of take notes of what stands out to you about that. The first thing is Naaman's character. Now notice, Naaman, captain of the army, we're kind of falling off the page there. I don't know if you guys can help me out here at all, but Naaman, the captain of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man with his master and highly respected. Because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man was also a valiant warrior, but he was a leper. At your table right now, I'm going to give you 1 minute with your leader to identify, there are at least four things there about his character that it shows that he was successful. I want you to identify what they are. Ready? Go. Four things from this one verse that show he was successful. Okay, you get about 10 seconds. All right. Who can give me the first thing that we know that he was a man of great character? What's the first statement that says about him that says something? Yes. He's a captain. Okay, what does it take to become the captain of an army? Do you just show up and they make you captain? Yeah, you have to be a leader. That's definitely a part of it. How else would you become captain? How long was he in the army, probably? A while, right? He didn't just show up and become captain. That tells me about him that he had worked hard and he'd made it to the top. He was seen above everyone else in that army. So he was successful. He was raised to the top. Second thing, what does it say about him? He was a captain of the army. He was a great man, like his master. Yeah. Highly respected. Now, actually, that was the next one. I want to just pull these apart a little bit. He was a great man, which meant everybody knew who he was. He was recognized with having power. He was even associated on par with the king. That's a big deal. Third one was, he was what? Nope. A what? You missed one. That's the next one. He was highly respected because he did what? Well, true, but it says in that he was highly respected because something specific. Yes? Yeah, he won. Meaning, when he went out and fought, he didn't have a good name and didn't do anything about it. He actually proved that he had the credentials. He was skillful in war, and he had won. So everybody was like, dude, you are a winner. And the last one, which you guys brought out, he was a valiant warrior, which means he wasn't the kind of leader that just said, hey, go fight, you know, and I'm smart, and I'll have you guys do this well. Probably like some of my favorite generals, you know, Stonewall Jackson and whatnot. He was engaged. He was in the midst of the battle. He was around it. He wasn't, you know, really. But anyway, I want you to get the idea here that Naaman was a guy who was incredibly successful. He was the right-hand man of the king. He was well-known, but he had one fatal flaw. One thing that was kind of like, oh, by the way. And that is he was a leper. Now, a leper, we don't see them or think about them much, but in that day, it was a disease where parts of your body would start coming off to the point where you would lose parts of your body and you would die eventually because your body just started, like my rust, it would just start falling apart. That is tragic. I know for me, I have a thing called psoriasis. So that means parts of my skin, actually what it is where skin grows faster than the skin around it, so it's always coming off. So I'm always shedding like skin, and my family hates it. Like sometimes I'm on my couch, I'm like, oh, Dad, come on, really. You know, sorry, it's just my skin, man. Yeah, so it's a little gross. So, you know, I go to light treatments and everything like that, and right now it's under control, which is awesome. But you know what? This, I can't even imagine having leprosy. Because not only is it not fun to look at, people just don't want to get near you. Like, ew, like, I touch you, I might get that. So think of this. He was incredibly successful, right hand to the king, but yet he was a leper. He had a major problem. And I'm going to come back to that and talk to you about that. But notice his character was great. Secondly, you'll see, you know, someone who is really key in this whole passage. It says, now the Arameans had gone out in bands and had taken captive what? A little girl. Like, woo. They obviously got a lot of other people. But they mentioned, out of all the people they got a little girl. Now, where was she from? She was from the land of Israel. And she waited on Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, I wish that my master were with the prophets who is in Samaria, or the prophet who is in Samaria. Then he would cure him of his leprosy. Now, you look at her life, and you realize she was taken captive from Israel. So she's serving the man that did that, okay? She's serving his wife, so she's part of the family around it. But notice what's going on in her life. If you were that girl, would you have had the attitude towards him? Or would you, like she, you can tell she has compassion. She has incredible faith. She's very gracious. There's no reason she should have been, but she was. Next, Naaman went in and told his master, saying, thus and thus, spoke the girl. It's kind of funny how they put that in the Bible. They're like, yada yada is what she said. And he was from the land of Israel. Then the king of Aram said, go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel. He departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 changes of clothes. So what do we see here? Well, the king had a plan, okay? The king's strategy was, I'm a king. I'm going to appeal to that king to get this thing done. If there's somebody there that's going to make it happen, he can make it happen. So, here's the deal. I'll write a letter. We're going to send a lot of money. Now, I thought it was interesting. You noticed that they had just taken a ton of people from Israel. So, like, really? I'm going to go back there and ask a favor? But he does. Okay? But then that backfires. Because, notice what he says. He brought the letter to the king of Israel saying, and now, as this letter comes to you, behold, I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you, that you may cure him of his leprosy. Now, that's not what the little girl said, by the way. Then the king of Israel read the letter, and he tore his clothes. Now, why does someone tear their clothes? Enough was today because you want to look cool. You know, you have to have the jeans and have the tears in it. So you pay people to make them that way. When I grew up, we made them on our own. They're always around the knees. But, okay, so he tore his clothes because it meant there is something wrong going on here. This is, I mean, your clothes are something you kept for a long time. You actually didn't change them that much either. So if he tore it, it meant I can't walk around with torn clothes all the time. I am making a major statement. Something is whacked out wrong here. Then he goes on and he says why he did it. He said, when the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, am I God? Are you kidding? Am I God to kill and make alive? That this man is sending word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? But consider now and see how he is seeking a quarrel against me. In other words, this must be a joke. Like, when did I ever say I could do that? And he's here, and his motive right now is what he's trying to do. He's trying to get a fight because he wants to beat us, show us, take more people or whatever. So this whole plan backfired, but that's what happens. Successful people use the things that they know well. So he did that. Then God intervenes. It happened when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent word to the king saying, why have you torn your clothes? Which is a great question. Like, what's the big deal? Did I miss it? Now let him, and then he said to him, he had heard, and this was his answer, and check this out. Now let him come, Now let him come, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. In other words, tell him there is power. There is a way to answer his issue. He just started at the wrong place. Started at the king. That's not where the answer was found. Okay? So that's how God intervened. And then here's Nathan's dilemma. And this will be yours and mine as well. So Naaman came with his horses and his chariots and stood at the doorway of the house of Elijah. So picture this. He walks up to Elijah's house. Somebody directed him there, and they got their way around. He and all these people, he didn't just come with one or two. Captain of the army didn't go with, you know, a little group. He went in an entourage, you know. There was no paparazzi there, but there was a lot of people around him, and they're all standing at his door. And so what does Elijah do? Well, it's interesting. It says, Elijah sent a messenger to him saying, go and wash in the Jordan seven times, and your flesh will be restored to you, and you'll be clean. Now, if it was you and me, we'd go, awesome. Awesome. I can do that. That isn't what Naaman did. Because he's successful. He's a man of means. He's risen to the top. He went to the man who he thought had the power, and a man in power going to a man who has power. He felt what? This is what he felt. But Naaman was furious, and he went away and said, behold, I thought, in other words, I had expectations here, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call in the name of the Lord as God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper, me being the leper, okay? He said, I thought I'd show up. The dude would come out with some great clothes and maybe a hat and a wand. They'd come out and go, dude, you're all better. And I'm done. Why? Because if you're a successful person, people do that. They honor you. They show you you have importance, okay? But he's ticked. And then he says, are not Abinah and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned away and went away in a rage. Have you ever faced something in your life and you felt like you did not get the answer you were expecting? For instance, let's say you go to your parents and you say, hey, I really want to do this. And you're thinking, I've been a good kid. Like, you owe me this. This is an okay thing. And they said, no, not until you fill in the blank. And you're like, that's so wrong. That means you have the same issue that he did. We all do. Well, that was his dilemma. Now notice what his servants, his wise servants, said to him. They appealed to him. And he came near and spoke to him and said, my father, had the prophet told you to do something great, would you not have done it? In other words, if he said, go find that ring, okay, get the ring and take it to that place where you're going to drop it in that molten stuff, okay, but don't let it own you and turn you into some crazy little man like it has other people, okay, and so you're going to go over all this, you know, crazy terrain and all these obstacles, so you get there and it almost takes you, right? We can understand that, right? He would have done it. Why? Because he's a great man, and he would do things that prove that he was. But what he had told him was, I want you to do something that an idiot could do. And that's not what he wanted to. But then they say, how much more then, if he asks you something hard, why don't you do something, and he says to you, wash and be clean, why don't you do that? Like, you can do that if you want. You don't have to be an idiot. You don't have to walk away just because of your pride. And then notice what happened. He made the best decision he could. He went down, he obeyed, and dipped himself seven times in the Jordan. One, two, I don't know if he stopped. He's like, okay, so that 3, 7, 4, 5, I'm tired, 6, nothing happened yet, 7. The man of God and his flesh was restored. And notice this. I love the way God works. His flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child and was clean. In other words, God did exactly what he promised. He gave him back his body. The major thing that he faced, he gave him back. He was made whole. And there's a bunch of things I want you to learn from this. Okay? And that's on the right side. I'll give you some things for you to fill out on the right. But this is where I think we go with this. The first one is that character is great. It's a great and overlooked factor for success. I remember when I asked Pastor Minner when I was in high school, I said, what do I need to do to be successful? And he said, I'm surprised. He said, let God develop your character. Because as you gather your abilities, that's great. But there are a lot of people out there that are talented. There are not many people out there that are talented that have the character to back it up. And that's what I did. It's easy to work on the things that promise you success. You could focus on your academics. You could focus on your sports. You could focus on building a resume for high school and college and beyond. God says, if I gifted you, use that. But he says, don't miss what I'm doing right now. Some of the things that are causing you the greatest pain right now are God's plan for you. They're his school for you. He wants you to take note of it. He wants you to respond to them. But every successful person, this is something I want you to realize, every successful person faces a harsh reality. Every successful person. Now, I'll give you a couple examples. Muhammad Ali. When I was growing up, he was actually still fighting. And he made a lot of statements, but one of them was, it's hard to be humble when you're as great as I am. I'll never forget, I was at the Olympics in 1996, I think, in Atlanta. And he was the surprise guy that came out to light the torch. And he feebly made his way out there. The man who could fly like a butterfly and sting like a bee couldn't hardly move because of his Parkinson's. I don't believe that was necessarily a curse of God, but it was a wall that he hit, and every one of us hit a wall, and what we do with that wall is huge. And that's why we as believers have to take note. If success is our only goal, then we're going to miss what really he wants to give us around that. But it's also true of Tiger Woods, among the most successful guys. He hit a wall, and right now a lot of what he had is gone. Ronald Reagan, one of my heroes. I think he's one of the greatest presidents we've ever had. It's a shame. I don't know why God does things. But after he was president, a short while after that, Alzheimer's took over, which meant he was no longer able to use his brain and communicate. And I remember when his wife said, Ronnie wants to express his best wishes. He knows he's fading, and it's probably his last time to say goodbye. Well, he didn't die. He had many more years left. But it's just like, wow. I go and visit my granddad while he was in the nursing home, and I'm currently now visiting my mom and my stepdad. One thing I've noticed that nursing homes are a hard place. But they're hard because you meet people who are rich and famous and powerful, and right now many of them can't even feed themselves. So if all we focus on is success, we've lost it. Success is fleeting. God says he has something more for us than that. Secondly, success, and when we look at that little girl, I want you to realize success lands on those who have two things. One is great faith. She looked at God and said, God's incredible. I know this guy who will do this for you. No question, no doubt. To the point that, can you imagine a successful man taking the advice from a little girl? That was a big hill to climb, but he did it. And then secondly, the ability to forgive. For most of us, we have things that are our excuse not to deal with life. Someone has wronged me. Something has happened and disappointed me. I didn't get what I want. I'm not as tall as I wanted to be. I don't look as good as I want. I have more pimples on my face than any person should ever have. Whatever it is for you, we have an excuse to go, God, you've done me wrong. This little girl did not. Why in the world did she care about someone who made her a slave to the point where she was praying for them, I want you to succeed? Do we have that heart? Do you have that heart for your friends? Because you know someone who can help make them whole, but do you tell them? Or do you only get angry when they disappoint you and they hurt you and wound you? God says there is power in those who have faith and can forgive because they can move into the future and they can deal with their past. And that's part of what helps them enjoy their success. When we look at the king's strategy, we realize successful people overestimate their skills and their means. They are so convinced that they've got it and everyone else needs it that they just do their own thing. But they don't realize they have no control over their destiny. No control. It's an illusion. Each day is a gift from God. And they're ignorant of their need for God. And I will say this to you, many Christians, we are ignorant of our need for God too. We think we're just his favorites. And God will just bless whatever we do. And God says, I will not be mocked. Seek me. I want to bless you. But it's not on your terms. Don't be arrogant that way. When we look at the way God intervened, it's amazing to me. God is always intervening. God is pursuing all men. You know, Jesus said, I came to seek and to save the lost. And then he is still doing that. He's convicting them so they understand their need for righteousness and their need for forgiveness. God intervenes all the time. And then we looked at Nathan's dilemma. And he was told by Elisha to do things that were simple but offensive. Realize that God calls the successful to humble themselves before Him. God calls the successful to humble themselves. You'll notice if you study your Bible, humility is tied with many things that add up to success. Without it, you lose already. It offended him that he wouldn't come out to him. It's like, you're so important, you won't come out to me, really? Then why should I listen to you? And he gives a stupid request, anybody could do it. There's no glory for him. He was willing to do the hard thing to show that he was strong and capable. Notice the gospel parallel. Jesus did not say, do a hard thing. Work really hard in your life. Prove to me you're good and worthy of my love, and I will love you and forgive you and you can go to heaven. That is what most people think. If I'm good enough, if I do the heroic thing, if I give my life as, you know, the rest of my life, I'll be a monk. I will do crazy things, like go to church often. I know people who go to church every day. Every day. And they believe that's part of them getting to heaven. That's heroic. That's crazy. It's way beyond what you're doing. And God says, I'm sorry. I will give my glory to no other. I have made peace. I have made the way for you to deal with this. But I only ask one thing. Believe. If you're here today and you've never done that simple act of saying, God, I believe, I put my trust in what you did, then you have not yet come into a relationship with Jesus. And he wants you to humble yourself and go, you know what? I admit, I'm a bad person. I've done a lot of bad things. And I don't need to prove how good I am to God. He knows I'm not. But I need to accept his love in the way that he's designed. And that is what's keeping a lot of your friends. Your offer, when you tell them about Jesus and that what they need to do, it's not heroic enough. It's not big enough. That's what God says. And God does what he says. He provides healing and restoration. Naaman's obedience. When he went and he dipped 7 times, the truth there is obedience is possible only to the humble. I can't obey if I'm not humble. My pride will always give me the thought that I can say no to God. And lastly, success can only be handled when I know who God is. So notice, I love the last statement there, and I think I didn't read it. I'm sorry. Notice this. When he returned to the man of God, and to Elisha, with all his company, they're all hanging out there again. This time, Elisha came out. That was cool. And he said, behold, now I know there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. So please take a present from your servant now. But he said, as the Lord lives from whom I stand, I will take nothing. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, if not, please let your servant at least be given 2 mules load of earth. For your servant will no longer offer burnt offerings or really sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord. Naaman became a believer. And he said, I'm done with the stupid gods that don't do anything. This is the only real God, and I've got it. And he said, if you're not going to take a present, let me at least take a ton of dirt. Because I want to go back and I want to create a little Israel where I live. And I want to offer up a sacrifice to the living God. I am a worshiper now of this God. Now that makes no sense to us today. Unless you've been to the Grand Canyon and put it in a jar and you brought it back. And you're like, hey, I got the Grand Canyon in that jar. Okay? He wanted to do that for the Lord. And that was awesome. So where do we go with this? I want to show you right now a short clip of somebody who faced a wall and came through it with a different attitude. Okay, pull up Britain. pretty significant, doing very well in surfing. And then she hit a wall, like I said, all successful people do. She made a choice, though. It wasn't immediate. It took time. But she, I love her statement there. God has enabled me to give him glory or bring glory through my life. But you can only do that when you humble yourself and say, God, I'll let you do that. She's a successful person, not because she's a great surfer, but because she's allowed God to have that place in her life and to heal her and not choose bitterness. My question to you is, what are you going to do with whatever that harsh reality is in your life? Will you let God use it? Real quickly, I just want to summarize here some applications for you. Be successful in the ways that really matter, the relationships God has given you. Have compassion on those who are around you and direct them to the only one who can heal them both now and eternity. I would want you to recognize it's the grace of God that makes the difference, not your effort. Your effort is good. You should be an excellent student. You should use whatever gifts God has given you. But if you set success as an idol, he will let you down. God will not. Let his grace be the thing that will take you there. Secondly, seek the Lord first. Do not make building a resume as you move through junior high into high school your goal. Do your best. But I would challenge you to really think hard of, for some of you, I know some high school students who are playing multiple sports in one season. I know students in senior high that are taking 5 AP classes. And I would challenge them when they do that to say, are you that smart? And are you that good in all those sports? Because if you're not going to play college sport, Olympics, then why are you letting that really allow you, and most of them, it sucks the life and time out of their life, and they do not have a balanced time where they even are building character other than through that sport and their relationship with God. Seek first his kingdom, pursue his gifting, but don't buy into that train that says, I've got to make it this way. Allow God to build character into your life, because that is what he's trying to do. Let that be one of your primary goals. To say, God, teach me the patience. Give me the grace. Let me forgive. Let me be humble. Because God says he has no problem. And this is what I would challenge you. We talked before. God takes those who follow him